All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Time to shift a bit of our focus now, a bit more to the precious metals. However, we're still going to get some more comments on the markets, especially focused on the charts. Again, I think during these high volatile times, as I've said, pay attention to the charts and also understand kind of what the big picture theme is that is happening with money flows. We are now chatting with Richard Postma, aka Doc. And Doc, the last time we had you on the show, back at the tail end of February, and boy, oh boy, a lot has happened since then, and a whole lot of positive action for precious metals. I'd say maybe not the most positive action for the broad markets, for U.S. investors broadly, but look, back in February, we were talking about gold's potential to reach 3,000 and even how overbought it was just a couple months ago. You had outlined a scenario where gold probably did need a bit of a cooling down period. Well, gold cooled down for about a week at the tail end of February. Other than that, it has been up. And this week, a little bit of volatility again, but gold seems to recover faster than anything else out there. Doc, give us your assessment on the gold market, please.
Yeah, we're in the stratosphere right now. And we can see short-term pullbacks, and that wouldn't surprise me at all, because when you look at the long-term charts right now, we're way overbought, and we may drift lower here for a couple, 3 months, but that doesn't say we're done with the bull market, which I don't think we are, because the stocks have not responded, a lot of them yet, and that tells me we have a long ways to go in this bull market. But we are way overbought. But oftentimes you'll see in a major bull market like this that you can come back a little bit for a month or two, but still go higher. So I still say that you can get pullbacks here. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that this is the end of this bull market, which it isn't. But we are in the stratosphere, and but the market's still looking strong, but the 12 and the 26 months moving average on the MACD are quite a ways apart, and that's often a warning sign that you can get, you know, pullbacks, let's say, in a month, and you might have it for 2, 3, 4 months even. And that's a possibility, because a lot of these stocks, when we had the downturn in the Dow Jones, got pummeled rather heavily. And that tells me that they're going to be in a trading range for some time yet this year, possibly. And that tells me also that the gold market might become quiescent for some time. But that doesn't mean that the bull market's not over. That's pretty much what I'm saying.
Well, Doc, when you look at gold, there's no denying it's had an amazing run. I mean, just in the last couple of years, if we think about back to that triple bottom false breakdown back in 2022, it was at 1618. We've got up to like 3200 recently. So it's doubled in the last couple of years. And really, it's added on $1,000 just in the last year. But when you look at gold stocks, when you look at silver, they've done good. They've had rallies, but not to the same degree as gold. Is it possible that you could see a scenario where maybe gold just trades sideways or just cools off a little bit, but the gold stocks keep appreciating and catching up and that silver catches up? Could we see that environment where the gold-silver ratio comes down? Could you see that as a possibility?
Absolutely. And why you could see it is just look at the price of oil right now. Oil, the price is negative, and I think it's going to get more negative. Well, that's one of the major inputs for costs for these miners. And a lot of them are starting to actually look like real companies by spitting out cash flow or gargantuan cash flow, which they've never done in the past. In fact, they're acting like real stocks for the first time that I can remember. And then people are pretty bummed because they don't seem to coordinate with the rise in the gold stocks, but you could see, or with gold price, but you could see the gold price turn sideways or even down a little bit and not necessarily hurt the miners appreciably. And in fact, this big downturn we had recently with the Dow Jones Industrials, where gold got whacked and a lot of the miners got whacked, I bought again on Monday. That's how confident I am in this gold bull, because even though we could get a pullback, I think the miners would hang in their trading range very nicely.
Hey, Doc, almost everything got whacked over the last few trading days, early in the week, even tail end of the week before because of, I guess, everyone racing to the door. But the one aspect that I find so interesting, and when we do see big market sell-offs, we typically do see gold, and even the gold stocks bounce back the quickest and the strongest. But this environment right now where it seems like gold is being viewed as one of the only safe havens, the dollar's going down, bonds have not risen. We see yields very much stuck in a range, and U.S. markets, man, oh man, it's just a whole lot of red on the screen and a wide range, pretty much every sector. Again, outside of the precious metals, especially gold sector. What does this mean to you? Have we seen this in history where the only safe haven, at least in the near term, that we're seeing money flow into is gold?
We haven't seen this in history, at least in modern history, at all. And in fact, gold is my number one bet, and it continues to be, because we're seeing a change in the world. We're seeing a transformation in the world as we know it. We are seeing the neoliberal international rules-based order coming to an end, and that was established after World War II. It's coming to an end, and you're seeing a transformation, and nobody knows exactly how this is going to work out, but the United States is no longer going to be the big man on the block all by itself. We're going to have to learn to get along with others and negotiate instead of just enforcing our will on everybody through or militarily and economically. That's coming to an end. And that's one of the reasons I think gold has done as well as it has, because you're starting to see major players purchase gold, and especially the central banks, because they know there's a major change coming. And the old order of things where the dollar rules supremely is coming to an end. That doesn't mean that it's not going to continue to be the reserve currency for a time, but obviously things have changed for the dollar, not only through BRICS, which is accelerating that whole system, but the fact that changes are being made by the current administration, which will not be favorable to the dollar, and that will only help gold. I might add that they're talking about a sovereign fund as well in the United States. What do you think they're going to start to put in that sovereign fund? You can bet that gold will be a big part of it, in my view.
Well, Doc, I think you're spot on as far as the central banks around the world buying gold in a way of preparing. You know, it's their number two biggest asset on their balance sheet now after the U.S. dollar, ahead of other currencies like the euro or the yen or the yuan. So it's interesting that the central banks have been loading up, and it seems like the world has been loading up on gold, because gold is up in every fiat currency on the planet. It's not just a U.S. dollar story. It's Australian dollar, Canadian dollar, the euro, everything. Gold is up in all these currencies. That doesn't necessarily translate to everybody buying gold stocks, though. And so I think a lot of people understand and appreciate that gold is an insurance policy on chaos. It's an insurance policy on geopolitics and fiscal mismanagement, and it's doing its job. But I think a lot of people listening are probably invested in gold stocks, and they're wondering, you know, the central banks aren't buying them. A lot of generalist investors aren't buying them. Do more generalists start saying, hey, maybe along with gold, maybe I should have some of the gold producers? Could you see that switch happening?
Well, if you look at some of the volume over the last 2 or 3 months, almost 4 months, of some of these stocks, the volume has picked up tremendously. And I've been watching that. And then I saw the sell-off on Monday, and I'm thinking to myself that, holy cow, was that volume telling us that these gold stocks have peaked, when in fact they're low in comparison to what the gold price is? No, I actually think that people are starting to appreciate the precious metals site more. I think they're starting to look at it. And because it is such a small percentage historically to what's been held in the past, I think some big money is quietly starting to come into some of these stocks, and they're looking at them. And I think that's an excellent sign. Just look at some of the charts and the volume the last 3 or 4 months. For some of these stocks, it's tripled or quadrupled almost as far as the volume is concerned. So I think some strong hands are starting to take positions in some of these stocks very quietly. And I think we're going to, especially in the year, and I've said this before, a year ago, 2 years ago, 2 years ago, I mentioned that I thought that 2026 could be the best bet as far as when these stocks really go ballistic.
So, Doc, what subsector of the stocks are you looking at? The majors, a number of majors have done really well. A lot of mid-tiers have done very well. A lot of juniors have really just been left behind. But again, they're juniors. They sometimes don't even really have gold assets other than the gold in their name. So what subsector of the stocks, if you are saying next year is going to be a banger year for these stocks, which subsector is going to do the best?
I've been purchasing mostly producers that are considered mid-tier, between mid-tier and upper tier. Those are the ones I'm focusing on. And then I throw a few bucks toward the juniors every once in a while when they hit a monthly lower Bollinger band. But on a percentage basis, I'm really concentrating now on mid-tier that are actually producers, because I think they're the ones that are going to do the best as far as movement in this year or maintaining their positions.
Well, Doc, let's dive into those a little bit further then, because the mid-tiers are the companies that have the most growth compared to the seniors, which can't grow as much. And they also have the ability to do M&A deals where the seniors kind of have their hands full. So the mid-tiers, when you look at them, which ones get you the most excited? Is it companies with growth? Is it companies building mines? Is it somebody company that's buying mines? Which ones do you like the best?
Well, my number one that I've liked forever is Equinox. I've liked them for a number of years, and I've taken a position in them that's pretty good. And then on this recent pullback on Monday, on the opening, I purchased some more Equinox. I like the fact that they're producers of a good number of share of gold. And I also like their merger with Calibre, if that takes place. It has to be voted on yet, as we talked off mic. And I also like the fact that their management, and a lot of shareholders were disappointed in Calibre, but it was essentially a one-to-one share arrangement. But that tells me that the management at Calibre is putting their money where their mouth is, and that they feel that they can really make the mine that the summer is supposed to be opened successful, plus other mines that Equinox has. So they seem to have a level of confidence in their ability, and the number of ounces they're going to be able to put out in the next year or so is pretty impressive. And I think they have a lot of room for exploration of more potential gold. And so that's one of my favorite. And then there's others I like, especially in the silver sector. And I like Fortuna. That's another example of a stock I like, and I've been purchasing over time. Another one is Silvercorp Metals, and another one is First Majestic. And then I like Coeur d'Alene a lot because they're spitting out a lot of cash flow, and I love their chart because they've come off again, but they've rebounded. But it looks like Coeur d'Alene is going to trade in that range for a while yet, but it allows me to keep picking up shares whenever they move down. And I think Coeur d'Alene is not ready to break out yet, but I think looking at their long term chart that their odds of breaking out are pretty good in 2026 based on what I'm watching.
So when you're looking at these producers, what do you put more weight in, or how do you rank certain fundamental factors when you balance out costs? So do you care that it's a lowest quartile producer right now, or because the price is higher, are you okay with cost being somewhat higher? Do you look at total ounces being produced or a certain makeup of those ounces? Since you did touch on silver stocks, those aren't just purely silver plays. And then how do you discount, or do you even discount, jurisdiction in this environment? How do you rank those different fundamental factors?
Jurisdiction always bothers me, but sometimes I think it places us in a position where it scares us out of a potential mine that we shouldn't be pushed out of. And I know a lot of people look at jurisdiction, and it is important, but if they have other mines that are productive and that are good producers, I won't weight it as much as if it's their only mine in a questionable jurisdiction. And that's one of the ways I look at that, Corey, is if they were a lone producer in a questionable jurisdiction, then I would be uncomfortable with it. But if they have other good mines and that are good producers in other good jurisdiction, I don't consider one bad jurisdiction as something to keep me from purchasing a particular company.
Yeah, good points, Doc. I mean, all the companies you just mentioned could be considered jurisdictional risks. Silvercorp's in China, and they just bought another project in Ecuador. Neither one of those is a top-tier caliber that we're talking about. Operating in Nicaragua, Equinox has mines in Brazil, along with their, you know, domestic companies at mines. So you look at some of these producers, Mexico for silver, most of them are in Mexico. So you pretty much have to be okay with Mexico risk if you're going to be in the silver stocks. So do you look at other things like growth or how much output they have, or is the exploration more important? What other criteria out of the ones Corey went over do you weight heavier than others?
I also like producers that have a big land package. I think the number of hectares they have is very important. That's number one. Number two is, you know, you have all these criteria. Is good management that in the past has been successful? To me, that's very important. And the number three is the grade that they're dealing with. Grade to me is awfully important. And those are just three that I really put high on my list as far as when I look at the fundamentals. And then I throw that in with the technicals. And I always try to purchase on pullbacks. And I'm a long-term holder now. I'm not selling anything of what I own particularly right now. And I know we're going to get the big run coming up. And I talked about this would be a stair-step procedure. I talked about that back in 2021. Where no, this is not going to be a V shape for these miners. It'd be a gradual, and that's what we're seeing. But we're going to get to the point where we're going to have a big blow off in the gold price, and you're going to see these miners really take hold. And I think we're starting to see that with the volume coming into this area on some of these companies. But it sure is different from the past where you had mines that were really sloppily run, but they would have these huge price runs. But now we actually have gold at prices where these things are profitable and they just seem to sit there, but they're going to have their day. It's coming. And I think what it's telling you is the fact that they haven't seen that last rush yet with the juniors is telling you that the gold price is going to stay up in this area and probably even proceed further in the future. That's what it's telling you, that we're not anywhere close to the end of this gold bull market.
Yeah, that's one thing I just keep on watching is that I know everyone wants their junior stocks to run, but when those things pop and just explode higher, that is usually very much the end of the cycle for a bull market move in the precious metals. Doc, I want to ask you about one other commodity that we've talked about a fair bit. It's copper. Copper went on a run not all that long ago to well over $5 and then immediately gave up about a dollar. It's been volatile as can be. The one thing that stood out to me is that even when copper was running up to over $5.20, the stocks weren't doing anything. And right now you look at something like COPEX, Copper Miners ETF, that's at multi-year lows. It is completely broken down. And quite frankly, it just didn't confirm that move in copper. What happened in the copper market in your eyes?
Well, I think it's because you're not seeing growth right now in a lot of these countries and in the U.S. too. I think GDP is really going to be disappointing for this first quarter, and it's going to be coming out, but I think it's not going to be a good GDP. And I think copper is signaling the fact that there's not a lot of growth going on. So that's all it's doing. And it really, copper is not in a bad situation, even though it's sold off. It's in a trading range as far as a monthly chart is concerned. So I'm not concerned about copper here at all. I think we could move back down to 350 to 375. And it's still okay. So copper is not breaking down appreciably, even though everybody thinks it is. But when you look at the chart, it really isn't. So I think copper is just in a fine position. It's just biding its time. And it's going to for a while, because I'm afraid that we're going to see countries struggling as far as growth. Europe is in deep trouble right now. The United States, the GDP is not going to be good, I don't think, for the first quarter. And China's having its own problems. So copper, I don't think, is going to go anywhere, either significantly up or down.
Well, Doc, let me throw another one at you in light of those comments on the macro side. What about the energy markets? Look at oil. Oil has just really fallen out of bed lately. It's broken down some of those price ranges it's been in. But the oil stocks, look at XLE, the ETF. Boy, that thing fell out of bed in the last couple of weeks. Do you think this is a key change for the energy sector that's longer term? Is this a buying opportunity? Does it have more to fall? How are you looking at energy and the gold and the oil stocks?
I would stay out of oil for a while, and probably for most of this year. I've been watching the stocks, and I'm starting to nibble a little bit in the oil stocks, but not to any big degree, because I think there's going to be pressure yet on oil. I think we're going to continue to move toward $50 to $40 a barrel in oil. And so I'm not gung-ho about the stocks yet, although, like I said, I've nibbled. But it's more to make sure they're on my watch list than anything. But I will be purchasing. I'll be looking at them seriously, I think, as the year proceeds, because they'll be a great buy in the future, but not right now. I think there's going to be more down pressure on oil.
Is this going to be a U.S., maybe even global phenomenon here, at least in the near term, where pressure hits all these markets simply because of what's going on geopolitically, what's going on around the world? And quite frankly, the indecision markets hate indecision. They hate question marks. And that seems to be all that we have. So there's a lot of sectors that are simply just going to continue to lag until we get some clarity in terms of trade, even in terms of economic growth, that who knows when that'll be.
I think it's going to be that way for a while, Corey. I think we're continuing to see volatility and chaos throughout the world. This isn't a short-term thing. We're in a major transformation, and it's going to take time for things to settle down, but it won't be for a while. And there's one market I keep mentioning every time I'm on, and people better be cognizant of it, and that's the bond market. I have said before, and I'll say again, and I'll keep repeating, that people better consider the bond market, because when you look at the long-term charts right now, and this is right now, and it could change. I always have to qualify that, because people are so literal, that right now we have the possibility of a second leg down in the bond market in the next year, according to the long-term charts. Now that could change, but right now, and then you have to ask yourself, okay, why is that? What is it? And if people just consider the fact that we had this big sell-off in the conventional market, and guess what? The bond market didn't move. You would have expected it to turn more bullish, which it didn't at all. And that's telling you volumes right now that the bond market is broken. So you have to ask yourself, why would the bond market move back down with another leg down in the future if that happens? And that tells me that we're setting up for a really chaotic period of time in this country and the world. And there's a number of reasons why the bond market would respond the way it is.
Well, Doc, just to follow up on that, a lot of people have made the point for the last couple of years that after a 41-year bond bull market, it would make sense for there to be a longer-term bear market in the bonds. But if that's the case, and if bonds keep going down, then that would mean rates would keep going up. At one point, you would think the Fed would have to jump in there and start doing QE again and buying those bonds, because otherwise rates are going to get to the point where it's bad for business and it's also bad for their balance sheet. So what's the balance there, or the rub there, between if the bonds are in a bear market and what the central bank will have to do?
Well, that's the problem now for the central bank. Is, as we often talk, there would become a point in time where the Fed would be between a rock and a hard place while we're there. And there's a number of reasons for the bond market to sell off. One of them, of course, is that maybe inflation isn't going to go away like everybody thinks, even with a slowdown in growth. And of course, that stagflation. Now, people would say, well, this past month's report was better than expected for inflation. That's true. However, I don't know if we're going to get back to the 2% level like everybody would hope. That's number one, especially with slowdown globally, and not only in the United States, but China and Europe as well. That's number one. And number two is in the bond market. There's a loss of confidence in the United States globally and throughout the world. There's a loss of confidence in the dollar. And what would get people to buy the bond market, especially if they're going to steal your bonds if they don't like what you're doing, or like with Russia as far as their holdings. And so there's a inclination for countries to start to sell off their bonds, and especially with all this tariff talk along with it. And I think you're starting to see that even Japan is starting to back off. So I think you have two pressures on the bond market, and I think they're going to be with us for a while.
Yeah, it really seems like this exit from the U.S., a trend that I've never seen in my lifetime, something that's really hitting home with me, just even in the last couple of weeks here, seeing some of these market moves. Volatility is one thing, but the lack of any other safe haven aspect, especially on the U.S. front, really sticks out to me. Doc, again, this whole breakdown in U.S. confidence, right? It's something that I know gold bugs have talked about for quite a while. I've pushed back on that. Maybe it is happening now. This could be very early on. What do we need to watch out for that does really show us that a generational shift is happening in here in terms of money flows and in terms of something that would drastically change the overall makeup of the financial markets?
Well, I think you're seeing it in what we just talked about. And I think BRICS will continue. And in spite of Trump's threats to BRICS, I think they will continue to make the moves that they feel they have to become more independent of the United States. Their institutions like SWIFT and the IMF and the World Bank and all those, they are on their path to develop their own regional system of economic governance. And that's what you're seeing. So you're seeing that, and you're seeing the debt problems in the United States now finally hitting them square in the face. And so you have multi-factors. We're seeing a real change in this whole global system, and the neoliberal rules-based international order is coming to an end that was put in place after World War II. It's on its way out. And our hegemony is being compromised, and we have a choice to either try to negotiate with the rest of the world and get along with them for the first time in our history, or we can still think that we're trying to maintain our position and continue to shoot ourselves in the foot by sanctioning everybody and by militarily trying to compromise people that don't bend their knee to us. And that's the choice for us going forward.
Well, Doc, just a quick follow-up on that. When you think about what a statement that is that you just made, I guess we were debating this off mic, but are we entering a situation where it's going to be inflationary because the whole world, not just the US, but China, Europe, everybody has to try to inflate their way out of this by printing more money? Do you see a scenario where we're hitting a deflationary thing where everything, there's so little demand that the price of goods have to drop? Or are we in a situation where really gold is the only safe place to hide because there's nowhere else that has any growth, even on the remote horizon? So what kind of a long-term macro environment do you see us entering into as far as how it relates to markets, and in specific, how it relates to gold?
I think that there's going to be a push-pull, tremendous push-pull between deflation and inflation. And ultimately, based on the Great Depression and the history of that, I think the central banks will always err on the side of printing more money if they have to. So ultimately, I think inflation wins out. And I think that's going to be the thing that will continue, because every politician understands that they have to satisfy their constituency, and otherwise they're not going to have a job. And they will always err on the side of spending money. And the only problem is, how do you get out of your debt situation and still be spending money and still keep your economy going. And that's going to be the big question of the future. And I think the bond market is telling us that inflation is not dead at this time.
Boy, oh boy, what a historic week we just lived through. Volatility and some of the biggest market moves, even to the upside for something like the NASDAQ, the second largest move in history. And then pretty quickly, almost given right back. Again, some of the biggest rallies do happen during bear markets, and who knows what's going to happen week after week, even day after day, since these markets in the short term are moving so much off of tweets and reports and rumors. The long-term trend, though, definitely does seem to have changed pretty significantly. How long that'll take to play out, who knows? But right now, as we've really driven home here, the main benefactor, one of the only benefactors, has been the precious metals, especially gold, and the gold stocks are doing quite well as well. Doc, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. Please keep in touch with Shad and I through email and through our website. Also, visit our YouTube page. Just search DKE Report. Make sure you like, subscribe, and comment on our podcast and YouTube. And also feel free to follow our Substack account, where you can get a summary of all of these interviews, really the highlight bullet points. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.